This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkel, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. GOP vice presidential nominee Mike Pence says Hillary Clinton should apologize for some campaign emails that were critical of Catholicism. The emails were part of an ongoing WikiLeaks release of hacked Clinton campaign emails. Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, joined Tony to discuss the emails.
Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony, and thanks, Catholics and evangelicals standing together against these bullies.
Well, you and I have stood together a number of times because we believe in religious freedom in this country, and our view of religious freedom is consistent with that of the founders, that you should be free to live your life according to your beliefs.
That's exactly right. And, you know, what's amazing about these people, and I'm glad you mentioned how she was so upset about anti-everything else. Now we have anti-Christian statements, anti-Catholic statements being made by people who are high up in her campaign. And now, today, the new revelation, a new development, John Podesta, in the thread, in WikiLeaks, now working with others for a revolution. That's their words, not mine, a revolution. They want to sow the seeds of a revolution within the Catholic Church, which is why they created these phony Catholic groups like Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good and Catholics United, both funded by George Soros. So here's the connection, people. The point man for all of this is John Podesta. He creates these phony Catholic groups to act like termites and to engage in mutiny against the Catholic Church, and he gets the money from George Soros, and then he has groups like Catholics United, which then work with their friends at the IRS to come after me, which they did in 2008, which I could go on for quite a while, which I won't do. But I'm saying this is far worse than just a bigoted comment. We know they have people who are anti-Christian bigots high up in the Clinton campaign. We now have something far more serious, more than just obstructionists. They actually want to create a, quote, revolution within the Catholic Church.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that disdain that they have for Catholics. Now, this was an exchange between John Halpin and Jennifer Palmieri, who is the communications director for the Clinton campaign. And Halpin talks about how, quote, many of the most powerful elements of the conservative movement are all Catholic, many converts, he has in parentheses. From the Supreme Court to think tanks to the media and social groups, it's an amazing bastardization of the faith. They must be attracted to the systematic thought and severely backwards gender relations and must be totally unaware of Christian democracy, end quote. Sounds pretty slanted in their disdain.
Well, it's more than slanted. I mean, there's a game plan here. As I say, that comment is untoward, it's offensive, it's insulting, it's manipulatory. But now we have a new round. Sandy Newman, who's the founder of a left-wing group, Voices for Progress, said in an email to Podesta, how can we, quote, plant the seeds of the revolution? And then Podesta, they come back and they say there needs to be a Catholic spring in which Catholics themselves demand the end of a middle-aged dictatorship and the beginning of a little democracy and respect for gender equality in the Catholic Church. And then Podesta comes back and says, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I'm creating these phony Catholic groups, which I've exposed for a long time, just like Catholics for a Free Choice. It's always George Soros' money from the Open Society Institute, and it's always these groups who are no more Catholic than I am Buddhist, or you are a Taoist as opposed to being an evangelical. And yet they use these names out there to try and confuse people. But this is so pernicious, so invidious, that they would actually try to crash somebody else's religion and create a revolution from within.
It's insightful, though, to the way they think. First off, is they have this disdain for religion, but they also see as an obstacle to their agenda, because they have knowledge of it. as Palmieri talks about the subsidiarity of the Catholic teaching, because what that teaching is that, you know, those things that can be done by the individual, those things done at the local level should be done, so we don't need huge, big, overarching government. That's a problem for them, and so they see religion, Orthodox religion, I should say, as an obstacle to their agenda.
That's very insightful. You're absolutely right. There's a Catholic doctrine, Christian doctrine, called subsidiarity, which means the people closest to the problem are best able to fix it. That's why I love Mother Teresa, because she worked with the poor. She didn't just write blank checks to people and ask the government to fund some new program. Yes, that's exactly it. Now, if you're a statist, if you believe that government welfare programs are the best way to conquer poverty, and you're not, and you're certainly going to look at Catholics and evangelicals and Mormons and others, Orthodox Jews and others, in their faith outreach programs, you're going to look at them as a threat. That's why Christopher Hitchens hated Mother Teresa, because he was a socialist. He had the grand design of the state. And these people out there, these Christians out there trying to help the poor, they're just a deterrent, an obstacle. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's exactly a good insight into the way these people think. The mindset is absolutely amazing.
And this is not a new tactic. It goes all the way back to the New Testament church. Paul spends a lot of his time in his 13 letters talking about those who begin to sow false teaching in order to divert the focus of these new converts. And this is what they're doing. They can't defeat Orthodox faith that is founded on truth and focused on Jesus Christ. So therefore, they have to bring in, as you've talked about, these other organizations that are Catholic in name. In fact, they've even started some evangelical organizations that are evangelical in name to try to pervert and twist the teaching of Scripture.
And you know when this happened, Tony? I can tell you when it happened. It happened right after 2004, because at that point, and you certainly played a role in this, the polls showed that the values voters were the most important determinant in getting George W. Bush reelected. Something like 25% of the voters signaled values as the most important mission. Then you had Soros and others, John Podesta being the key point man. They sat down and decided, why should we yield this out to the Perkinses and Donahue, so to speak? Why should we yield this religious turf to them? But they knew they didn't have enough of the people on the left who are Catholic, at least in terms of the organized ones, and on the left within certainly the evangelical circles. So they created these dummy groups with the idea that, well, you know, just throw a name on it and that'll be good. And then we can at least confuse the public, if nothing else. That's why I say to invade somebody else's home, to crash it with the purpose of upending it, that is pernicious.
Yeah, and there's groups like that you're absolutely right. The timing of that, you had Bishop Gene Robinson, who had been with the Episcopal Church, came out leading one of these groups, who has spent most of his time since then organizing against individuals like you and me who are speaking out of it, trying to say they don't speak for the Catholic community, they don't speak for the evangelical community. So you're absolutely right. That's what's happening. But what voters need to see here, Bill, is that this is not just something that activists, and you know what? Hey, look, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want to do in this country, that as long as it's legal. Now, I think this is unethical, but you know, it's what they're doing. But this is more than that. This is a political campaign that, to me, this is very revealing of how they would hold religion if they were in office.
Well, they're not just secularists. They're militant secularists. There's a profound difference. And look, when they came out with those comments yesterday, Palmieri and the others and Podesta not having any integral role, but he never counseled against it. I came out and said, listen, there should be sanctions against these people by Hillary Clinton. But now we know that they've taken to a whole nother level. Now they want to basically crash the Catholic Church and turn it inside out and upside down. That's why I put out a statement here a few hours ago, Tony, saying this guy's got to go. Hillary Clinton is now integrally involved. You cannot have your campaign manager saying that the goal is to work with others to plant the seeds of a revolution, which is exactly the words, I'm not exaggerating, that are found in the latest thread of WikiLeaks emails.
Let me, final question for you, Bill. Polling suggests that Clinton is doing fairly well with white Catholic voters. They're evenly divided, pretty much. 46% favor Clinton, 42% Trump. Is this something that could move those voters?
Well, let's disaggregate. We got a situation here with Catholics between practicing and non-practicing. Are there liberal practicing Catholics? Yes. Are they in a minority? You bet they are. My point is this. Non-practicing Catholics have more in common with the nuns, the people who have no religion, they say they have none, than they do with Catholics because they don't go to church. Practicing Catholics are overwhelmingly conservative. Unfortunately, in our society, a lot of young people in particular are moving away from religion,
right.
And so it does tend to skew these things. But yes, in answer to your question, is this something that can make a difference? I'll do everything I can to get the word out, because
right.
This is raw, rank bigotry, and it should not be tolerated against any religious group.
All right, Bill, we're out of time, but I'm sure those practicing Catholics have more to do with the nuns.
I would hope so.
Of nuns. Yeah, all right. Thanks so much for joining us, Bill.
Thank you so much. Always good to talk with you.
You can find out more about Bill Donahue when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, we'll be joined by political science professor from Stephen F. Austin University, Dr. Lee Payne. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. In these waning days of the election season, it's easy to forget about party platforms. Political party platforms are like a rudder on a boat. They serve as the principal goals, which are supported by a political party or individual candidate in order to appeal to the general public. Dr. Lee Payne is an associate professor of political science at Stephen F. Austin University, and he joined Tony to talk about the importance of the party platforms.
Dr. Payne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have looked at your study, found it fascinating, and was shocked, honestly, if I can say that, by your findings. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, if you read the article and you referenced my dissertation, I took work done by Pomper and Pomper and Lederman from the 40s through the 76 platforms, and then replicated it forward from 1980 through 2008. And one of the key reasons I wanted to do it over this time period is because the parties have become so much more polarized mm-hmm. in this time period. And I wanted to see how that polarization would affect the way that the platforms were written the promises they made, the whole theory behind the article is platform promise keeping, whether they make promises and then stand by them once they're elected. And what I found and what I thought I would find is that the parties are becoming, their platforms are becoming much more rational as the polarization has increased. And by rational, I mean making promises that that are things that can be measured with mm-hmm. dollar amounts spent in Congress and that kind of thing, instead of irrational promises, which are pledges to basically make America great again, something along those lines.
Right.
There's not a real way to measure that.
Right.
So the parties are becoming much more rational. They're becoming much more distinct, which is good for voters, in my opinion. So polarization doesn't always have to be a bad thing. It's kind of the conclusion I drew from the research I did.
So less platitudes, these high-sounding ideals, to more practical policies is what's finding its way into these platforms.
Yes. Popper and Lederman, they divided the kind of promises that the platforms can make into six different kind of categories. And the rational ones that fall under continuity, so a continuation of something like spending on defense, we're going to continue to spend X amount of dollars on defense. Goals, we want to lower taxes is a goal that they could have, or raise taxes if you're on the Democrat side. Detailed promises and the like. While the non-rational ones fell under what they coded as rhetorical or general. So again, something along the lines of make America great again, or we will shore up the economy without any kind of specifics. Those are what fall into those. But what I found in my research is that the vast majority of the promises that they make in the platforms are of the rational type. 76.2% were rational promises made.
Well, let's talk about those promises. Let's talk about those rational promises. How often, let's start with the Democratic Party. How often does the Democratic Party actually do what they say they're going to do if it's a measurable, practical promise?
A little less than the Republicans, but it's minuscule. It's within, I think, 2.2%. So the Democrats are trying to keep their promises just as well as the Republicans are trying to keep theirs.
Yeah, what percentage of the time?
It's around a 78% time.
So 78% of the time, you're saying that the Democratic Party, the practical policy initiatives that they placed in their platform, they pursued that?
Yes. Now, there's two different things we're looking at here. One is, are the promises they make rational?
Right.
And for both parties, again, there's a 2.2% difference. For the Republicans, were slightly more rational than the Democrats were. But yes, once the paper that you looked at doesn't get into the analysis of the voting, which I did in my dissertation, when they do the votes in Congress on the promises they've made in their platforms, both parties are very good at trying to keep the promises they make. Now, this does not follow all the way to the president's desk, so I didn't track it to see if it was actually passed.
Right.
Some of these are procedural votes.
Right. I understand. But these are priorities. These do become priorities for the parties.
Yes.
Let me just say, I was shocked. Okay? And I've been a part of this. I've been a part of writing platforms. In fact, wrote a large portion of this last platform, amended it as a delegate. And I had no idea that historically the Republicans have actually pursued these things to the degree that your research showed. Now, the 78% for Democrats, what was the percentage for Republicans?
It's around 80% for Republicans. It's real close.
I have to say, again, that's amazing. That
yeah.
would tell me that these party platforms actually have significance.
They do. And one of the things I pointed out in my article that I wrote is the average American doesn't read the party platforms, and I don't blame them. When I did this research for my dissertation and read those party platforms, by the end of it, I never wanted to see another one again because they can, you know, be mind-numbing at times. But that doesn't mean that this information doesn't get out to the average voter. It gets disseminated through radio shows like yours, Rush Limbaugh, the news, even in church. You know, ministers can bring up party platforms in a way that lets the parishioners know which party stands for something that may or may not coalesce with the beliefs of the, you know, the parishioners. So the information gets out.
Wow. Dr. Payne, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. And again, very helpful, insightful research. Thanks for doing it, and thanks for talking about it with us today.
Thank you for having me.
To find out more about Dr. Payne or the party platforms, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, is there more fallout from Target's bathroom policy? We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain. This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the values bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. The National Center for Public Policy Research reports that in recent days, Procter & Gamble shareholders overwhelmingly rejected a shareholder proposal designed to have the consumer goods company join the recent corporate wave of opposition to religious freedom, public accommodation, and freedom of conscience laws. Phil Burris from Citizens for Community Values joined Tony to talk about it.
Phil, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. My honor.
Well, Phil, let's talk about this. Procter & Gamble refusing, the shareholders, refusing to get involved in these cultural battles. Now, let me just say Procter & Gamble's not pristine on this. They've done other things. But are you surprised that this was overwhelmingly rejected in the wake of what Target has faced?
I'm not at all surprised that the shareholders would vote this way because the public is with us on these issues. These companies like Target and others are trying to force their values, join in the media to try to force these values on us. And when the shareholders or we the people are polled or were asked about this issue, just like as far back as 2004 when we did the marriage amendment here, 62% of the people of Ohio said marriage is one man and one woman. And yeah, you're right. Procter & Gamble is not perfect. But about 10 years ago, we were invited, several of the pro-family leaders were invited to sit down with senior management, and we were pleasantly surprised that they were willing to listen to us, not only about where they placed their advertising, but also their agenda or their policy dealing with the homosexual agenda.
Now, this is pretty interesting because, again, you point out this is the shareholders, although the board of directors also, I think, joined in opposition to this proposal. But the shareholders, for them, you're a shareholder, for the most part, because you are interested in the bottom line. You want to make money. Target has lost nearly 20% of their value. Their shares have dropped because of their changing room bathroom policy. And so I think this is something that could very well spread among shareholders who are investing in these companies, not to make political, cultural statements, but basically to get a return on their dollar.
Tony, I do not understand why any corporation or any business would want to wade into these public policy issues. You know, Procter & Gamble is in the business of making soap. You know, Target is in the business of selling, you know, clothes and merchandise such as that. Why do they want to do this? And, you know, I cannot thank you and FRC and the other pro-family groups enough, because I believe with all my heart that if Target had not taken a hit for what they tried to do, and I'm sure that your listeners have already heard what they tried to do, and if a boy feels like a girl, he could go into the girl's bathroom. I mean, how absurd that a company would adopt that policy. So I think if it had not been for Target being hit hard, that I'm not so sure this vote would have gone that way.
Well, let's just hope that Procter & Gamble stays clean and they stick to making soap, right?
Yeah, and I'm encouraged to do that. There was, in the meeting that we had with them, it was a confidential meeting, but I will say this, that we were pleasantly surprised, the senior staff, when we showed them some of the ads that they were placing on some of the TV stations, and they were legitimately embarrassed. And they basically said, we don't want to do that anymore. So I give Procter & Gamble maybe a B- right now and when it comes to family values, but I do believe that they've come a long way from where they were a few years ago.
Well, that's good to hear. Phil Burris, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for keeping an eye on things there in Cincinnati, and great to talk with you again.
Thank you, Tony.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.